Second Chronicles chapter 29, and that's where we'll begin tonight. And Lord willing, come Sunday, we'll continue this study on the King Hezekiah himself, and hopefully finish it in the next class. Now, who had just been king prior to Hezekiah? Who had just been king? Ahaz. And what kind of king was he? Not a good one. Okay. And so now here's his son. We're going to be on Hezekiah. It's 2 or 3 pages in. So now here's his son taking over. What was the condition of Israel? Okay. So the Lord's house was not being used. Okay. Were people in captivity? Yes, they were. Okay. So, Ahaz, Edom had come in and taken some in captivity. Assyria may have. They'd lost land to the Philistines. I don't know that the Philistines took any into captivity. But certainly the people were afflicted when Hezekiah came in. Did they have an army? No. They had no military. They were a very, very weak nation at the beginning of his reign. So, now how old was he when he became king? Hezekiah. 25, okay. And he reigned for how many years? 29, okay. So, we can figure out then, you know, approximately when he died by adding those numbers together. Okay. Now, so to start with, I want us to get some times in our mind. So in the questions that I have, when did Hezekiah, King Hezekiah, open the doors of the temple and begin repairs? Now I'm talking about this whole process. When did he begin? First year, first month. Can we go more detail than that? Okay. And that's over what in verse 17. So the first, get this. Not only was it the first year, not only was it the first month, it was the first day. Day one, he began his process of restoring the worship of Israel. And then we've got some time breakdowns even further on this. When did the priests begin to concentrate themselves? Steve just answered that on the first day. And how long did that last? 8 days, okay. And then so after they concentrated themselves, when did they begin to concentrate the house of the Lord? No, they didn't begin on the 15th day. Sorry? The 8th day. Okay. And so when did they finish? On the 16th day. All right. So then on in verse 20, it says, Hezekiah the king rose early and gathered the officials of the city and went up the house of the Lord. And we read from there, they began a sacrifice. Now, so what day are we now? 17th day. Okay. So you notice how rapidly King Hezekiah went into action. Okay. In trying to restore the temple worship. In what month as we we're not through in this chapter, but it goes into the next, as it continues in the next chapter 30. In what month was the Passover supposed to be observed? And what day? First month, 14th day. Okay. So already by the time the consecration was over, what day were we at? It was beyond, it was the first day, Okay. I mean, the first month, but they were already beyond that. Okay. So when did they keep the Passover? And we'll get into more detail on that later, but when is it? What day? 14th day. So it was 1 month late. So I just wanted you to see the time frames here of how Hezekiah went into action, you see, on the very first day of his kingship. 25-year-old, you see. What do we think of 25-year-olds? But here's a 25-year-old man that sprung into action on day one. And we'll talk more on that. Let's look back now at the 29th chapter. And continuing this point, you know, of the cleansing of the temple and the worship and so forth. Let me stay in the 30th chapter because I want to ask one more question on that Passover. Why did they not observe it? Now I know they were past the day, but what was the reason that the scriptures give that they wanted to do it in the second month? Okay. All right. It says in verse 3, for they could not keep it at that time because the priests had not consecrated themselves in sufficient number, nor had the people assembled in Jerusalem. And I want to continue with those thoughts, you know, now. So it says here that in verse 2, the kings and his princes and all the assembly in Jerusalem took counsel to keep the Passover in the second month. Yet the law, if we go back to Exodus chapter 12, talked about it being done in the first month. Was that acceptable to God to change the month? Jeroboam changed the month, did he not? Jeroboam set up a feast in the eighth month. I believe that feast probably should have been kept in the seventh month, and he set up a time for his own feast. And God was displeased with that. Was this acceptable? Why you say yes, John?
His voice was heard in verse 27, I believe.
Okay.
And he said he prospered in all things.
Well, I would agree, but I would go to verse 12. Because in verse 12, the hand of God was also on Judah to give them one heart to do what the kings and the priests commanded. And the kings and the priests had counseled to change this to the second month. Okay. So, and he approved. So, God approved of their decision to change this to the second month. Now, Okay. That if a person was unclean of the Passover, they could partake in the second month. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Thanks. Okay. Now, who was invited to attend the Passover? Okay, which people? I know the people of Judah. People of Israel. Notice what he did in verse 6. He says, his couriers went throughout all Israel and Judah with letters from the kings and his priests and his princes. And that the people may return again, those who had escaped from the hand of the kings of Assyria. Perhaps some had been in captivity and had gotten away. And then notice what he says in verse 7. Don't be like your fathers and your brothers who were faithless to the Lord God of the fathers. So he made them a desolation. Do not be stiff-necked as your fathers were, but yield yourselves to the Lord and come to his sanctuary that his fierce anger may turn from you. And he talks about the compassion that would be found if they would do this. And so look where his messengers, his couriers went, throughout all the countries of Israel, basically, Ephraim, Manasseh, Zebulun, and you can read on down Asher and, even down in verse, 18, it mentions some of these countries again and perhaps others. So numerous countries of Israel, of the 10 tribes that, that he went to, that these couriers went to get people to return. What was the reaction? Some mocked and some laughed, some scorned. Okay. All right. And that's found in verse 10. Okay. And what about some others? Okay. Some humbled themselves and came. All right. And I would suppose that such it would be at any time someone would try to bring people to the Lord. Some are going to mock and scorn, and some are going to turn. Jesus had this same problem. Remember the close of Matthew 23 as he, you know, is talking about the people of Jerusalem. And this is before his announcement of judgment upon the city in chapter 24. And he says, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I would have gathered you unto myself as a chicken would have gathered her brood, you know, under her wings, but you would not," you see. And so Hezekiah here finds some that would not, okay, even though the effort was made. Some responded and some did not. But what problem did they bring on, those who came from Israel? What was the problem that came with them? You see down in verse 18. That's right. Okay. They were not cleansed. Okay. And so, and how did Hezekiah handle that? Okay. So to allow them to partake unclean. So, you know, that appears, you know, but notice what happened in that. It says in verse 17, the Levites had to slaughter the lamb for everyone who was not clean to consecrate it to the Lord. Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, "The Lord God pardon everyone who sets his heart to seek God." And then notice God's approval. You see in verse 20, the Lord heard Hezekiah and healed the people. All right. So how long was this feast supposed to last? How long is the Feast of Unleavened Bread? 7 days. What happened at the end of 7 days? They wanted to keep it another 7 days. Okay. What were you saying, Gary? Okay. And so they kept it for another 7 days. Okay. And then John, in the verse, used verse 27. The priest and the Levites arose, blessed the people, and their voice was heard, and the prayer came to his holy habitation in heaven. So God put his approval upon those things that were done. So this is the work of Hezekiah, and we're just in the second month. We're just at the end of the second month now, you see. So this is how much he engulfed himself in doing the things that he set up. Now, we mentioned that he was age 25. And I'm not going to say that Hezekiah knew on a certain day he was going to become king, because to my knowledge, he didn't become king till his father died. And I'm going to assume that he didn't know what day that was going to be. I don't know that we have anything in the record to reveal otherwise. But what do you think Hezekiah had his mind on before he became king? Perhaps knowing that one day he would become king. What was his mind on? I would agree with that. It couldn't have been on anything else. His mind had to be devoted to thinking about what he was going to do when he became king.
But how did it happen that way? His father was wicked and evil.
I know
his
that.
His son was wicked and evil.
I know that. As, I know
it's
that.
Like, it's like it jumps generations here.
I know that.
He went back to David. Back in verse 2, it says he did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father David had done. So he knew, he had knowledge of it, what his father David had done. He used that.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, you know. We don't know what law he had access to read. We know when we get into Josiah, the law was lost. You know, Hilkiah found the law.
They had shut the temple.
The temple's been shut up, you know. But here was a young man that in his formative years had determined that he was going to serve God. Now, Sally, a part of what you're saying, asking, or bringing up may be answered this way. Jotham, the son of Uzziah. How was it, what happened to Uzziah? How did his pride step forth? Yeah, but what was it? He went to the temple to offer sacrifice. And the priest came to stop him, and he refused to stop, went into a rage, and God struck him with leprosy. And then Jotham becomes king, and it only gives us a very, very few verses about Jotham. But it says Jotham was a good king, followed David, and adds one more sentence. It says he did not go into the temple. He learned, you see. Now, we've seen a lot of these kings don't learn. On Israel's side, follow the ways of Jeroboam, follow the ways of Jeroboam, follow the ways of Jeroboam. It's like a stuck record, you see. But when you get into Jotham, evidently he saw his father's mistake and he learned. Perhaps that's what happened with Hezekiah. He saw his father's mistake and he learned. I wouldn't know what else, you know, to attribute it to. Okay. But I want you to think about the service that he engaged himself in from day one, the first day of becoming king. This was something that he had to plan, that he had to think about, he had to meditate on, he had to pray over. Okay. This didn't just happen. Now, there's service that we can do that's opportunistic. You know, it comes up, you know, we do it. Somebody's sick and we help them. Somebody is spiritually sick and we try to help them. And that can come up at any time, and we need to always be ready to help people in those situations. There's other type of service, though, that doesn't come that way. For instance, if a young man wants to be a preacher, does he just wake up one morning when he's 30 years old and say, I think I'm going to be a preacher? Does that happen that way? Does a man get older at age 50, 60, 70 and say, I think I want to be an elder? Does it happen that way? Some types of service take planning. Some cases, years and years of planning. This took some amount of planning for Hezekiah. So it's just interesting to me, and I wanted to bring you into my thoughts on, you know, the remarkable character of this man so young. And we're going to see more about his character as we go into it. But one of the points that I want you to have in mind about him is that young people can do a lot in service to God. We can't dismiss a person because they're young. Young people need to be encouraged, but young people have tremendous potential in service to God. And Hezekiah is really an example of it. We're going to see another example when we get into Josiah. And I may bring it out more there, you know, actually as we get into him. So, back in chapter 29, when Hezekiah took over as king, from verse 5, Israel, meaning the tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and they were under God's wrath. He says to the Levites, concentrate yourselves, concentrate the house of the Lord, the God of your fathers, and carry out the filth from the holy place. That's the situation that the temple was in, you see. He described the temple as basically a place filled with filth. And that goes back to what his father had done. Mike brought out earlier, they had shut the doors of the vestibule and put out the lamps and not burned incense or burnt offerings in the holy place. And then in verse 8, the wrath of God came upon Judah and Jerusalem. It was an object of horror, astonishment, a hissing, as you see with your own eyes. Your fathers have fallen by the sword, and our daughters and our wives, sons, daughters, and wives are in captivity because of this. Notice he understood why the captivity. He understood why God was displeased with them. And it's because of the way that their forerunners had conducted themselves toward God. Unfaithful, stopping the worship and such. But if you look at Hezekiah at this point where he sees these problems, what are his options? What could he have done? We see what he did. What could he have done?
He could have followed
what his father did. That's exactly right. He could have done what all so many of these kings before him and practically all the kings of Israel had done. He could have developed an army, or he could have made a covenant, a treaty with, you know, one of the neighboring nations, which, you know, was not what God wanted him to do. He could have done what his great grandfather done, Uzziah, gone in and offered sacrifices himself. And, you know, that can be rationalized because, you know, the people are unclean, the priests need consecrating, you know, there's just nobody here fit to offer the sacrifice. I'll go do it myself. He could have done what his great-grandfather had done. But all of these things, perhaps that was what he thought about, you see, before he became king. How am I going to do this? You see, what am I going to do? And thus he comes up, you know, with what he did. Yes.
Verse 7 makes the conclusion that because of that, the wrath of the Lord was upon Judah and Jerusalem and delivered them to trouble, to astonishment, to hissing, as you see with your eyes. And what has happened to the fathers and the daughters and the sons. And in verse 10 he says, now it is in my heart to make a covenant with the Lord God, that his fierce wrath may turn away from us.
Okay.
So that was.
That's the next question, you see. It was his heart, okay, that he had set to make a covenant with the Lord. Okay. This was good for Judah. Could Israel have done the same thing? Could a country like Assyria do the same thing? What chances had Assyria had to turn to God?
They never had a chance.
Through whom? Jonah. Okay. Book of Nahum talks about the Assyrians extensively. There were numerous chances that any and all of these nations had, not just to, you know, stay on Assyria. All of these nations had to turn to God. All of them could have. What about us? How many years when Asa, when they offered their sacrifice after the prophet had come to Asa and encouraged Asa to do what was right, and they offered sacrifices unto God, that was in the 15th year of Asa's reign. How many years did God give Asa peace? Say it. No, 20 years. That put him to age 30, that put year 35 in his reign, and at year 36, his heart was proud. Okay, lifting himself up. And it could have continued longer except his heart became proud. But he had peace for 20 years, you see, because he turned himself to God and led the nation. Okay? And, but we're not turning to God. So, in chapter 31, at verses 20 and 21, notice what it says is the basis for the success of Hezekiah. Chapter 31, verses 20 and 21. It says, Hezekiah did throughout all Judah. He did what was good and right and faithful before the Lord. Every work he undertook in the service of the house of God, in accordance to the law and the commandments, seeking his God, he did with all of his heart, and he prospered. This is a second reference we've had to his heart. Sally made reference to the first one a moment ago. He served God with all of his heart, and because of that, we read that he prospered. Now, I want us to notice a couple of things here about him. Let's go back to chapter 29. And I want us to note the encouragement that he gave to the people. And notice some of the things that's involved in encouragement. Sometimes we think of encouragement as just a pat on the back. And that can be a part of it. But I want you to notice some things here. Notice beginning in verse 5. Now, this is day one of his kingship, right off the bat. And so in verse 5, he's brought the priests and Levites together, and he's assembled them, and he says, hear me, Levites. Concentrate yourselves, concentrate the house of the Lord, and carry out the filth from this place. And he goes on and talks about what their fathers had done. So he explains their problem. He tells what the cause of it is. In verse 10, he tells what his plan is, what he's going to do about it. And then in verse 11, he says, do not be negligent, for the Lord has chosen you to stand in his presence, to minister to him, and to be ministers and make offerings to him. So he tells them what their responsibilities are. So notice what's involved. The word encouragement is not used here, but that's what it is. See, as the leader, at this young age, he's standing before them and says, this is our situation. This is why we're this way. This is what we're going to do about it. And here's your part in it. And he sends them out to do that. Now notice later on in this chapter, in the same chapter in verse 20. Now notice again what he does here. He rose up early. This is after the 16 days of cleansing and so forth. And the animals are brought in for the sacrifices and so forth. And notice that his participation in this, he's participating in bringing the animals together. Notice in verse 25, he stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with the cymbals. Verse 27, he commands that the burnt offering be offered on the altar. And verse 29, the king and all who were present with him bow down in worship. And then Hezekiah and the king and the officials command the Levites to sing praises in verse 30. In verse 31, he tells you, now concentrate yourself to the Lord, come near, bring your sacrifices. You notice, you see, how Hezekiah is taking leadership in this. He's in it. He's not back on his throne just kind of sending messengers out there to tell him to do this and do that. He's involved in it, okay? He wants this to happen. And he's out there personally among the people, among the priests, among the Levites to make sure this happens, okay? That's leadership. And at 25 years old, you see, he's taken charge to make sure these things happen and according to the law. We can go into the 30th chapter. And this is after he sent couriers out to the land throughout Israel and brought people down, and issues have come up about, you know, being able to this carry forward, like the lack of cleanliness and so forth, and he's addressed those things. And then notice what it says in verse 22. Hezekiah spoke encouragingly to all the Levites who showed good skill in the service of the Lord. He's encouraging them in the offering of the sacrifices, you know, to continue on and carry forth with this. And the encouragement, you know, evidently works, because not only do they keep the feast those 7 days, they keep it for an additional 7 days. Look in chapter 32. This is not part of the reading I want to get into tonight, but this is when Assyria is sent an envoy to tell Judah that, why don't you just give up? And so he calls his commanders together, and remember, he doesn't have an army, but what few he's got, he calls together in verse 6, and notice what he says to them in verse 7. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or dismayed before the king of Syria and all the horde is with him, for there are more with us than with them. Now here, Assyria has got a tremendous, tremendous army. And when we get into the class, Lord willing, on Sunday, we'll find out that Hezekiah didn't have enough men but just for a few horses. That's all he's got. He doesn't have anything to compare. But Hezekiah says there are more with us than with them. With him is what? With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. So, and notice how that worked, because it says in the end of that same verse, verse 8, and the Lord, and the people took confidence from the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. And when we get into the study next week, when Rabshakeh is talking to the people on the wall, trying to tell them that they need to not listen to Hezekiah, it says the people didn't say a word because the king had commanded them not to speak. That's what it's referring to. They had confidence in what Hezekiah told them. They believed him. The people knew what army they did not have and knew what army Assyria did have. But the people had confidence. This is leadership, you see. And this is tremendous leadership that this young man, he's older now at the point in 32. He's older at that point. But these other points, he's only 25 years old. Tremendous leadership that he shows. Any comment or question on that before we continue on?
I think it's all the more remarkable, this thing you're pointing out about Hezekiah. Start calculating today, unless I missed something. His daddy was only 11 when he was born. And so then you calculate today, he might have known his grandfather Joseph 7 or 8 years, which was a good man. I don't know how much influence Joseph had on him. We talk about dysfunctional families, bad families. His dad was 11 when he was born and lived to the age of 36. And yet he's this kind of man when he's 25.
Yeah.
Excuses people offer about
bad families go down the drain. Well, I'm glad you said that. I was going to bring that very point, parallel point out on that when we got into Josiah to see that point with him. But that's a good point. You see, dysfunctional families is what's in a person's heart. A person can rise up from a dysfunctional family. So any questions on this part before we move into the king's account? John.
I have a question. You know, just a little while back, a few years ago, Israel had attacked them. You know, I don't know where in his lifetime or if it was before his lifetime. I'm not sure. But he acknowledged this.
It was before.
Before, okay. But yet, he acknowledged this. He reached out toward Israel, in a sense, for all he done was he had concern for his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of what happened.
Opportunity to repent. But see, in that, he didn't just say, Israel, come on over as you are. You see, it's a lesson for today. You can't come as you are. You can't bring your sinful baggage with you. You've got to come with the right kind of heart.
Yeah,
well, that's true. That's true. That's true. Any other comment? In the king's account, turning back to 2 Kings, I think it's in chapter 18 where we're going to start. We're going to notice this, and we've got some parallel thoughts, a little bit different detail, and in the situation of when he became some of the things that he observed. For instance, in verse 4, it talks about removing the high places or breaking down the pillars and cutting down the Asherah and so forth and the bronze server that Moses has made. Obviously, he didn't start that on day one. That's why I wanted you to read the Chronicles account first. He went to restore the temple worship was the first thing that he did. Now it makes a statement in verse 5 that it's a recognition by the Spirit of God to what a good king he was. It says he trusted in the Lord, the God of Israel. There was none like him among all the kings of Israel after him, nor among those who were before him. This kind of puts him in a class by himself as far as his kingship, how good he was. Now, not to turn there, but we're going to later on, Lord willing, when we look at Josiah in the 2 Kings letter, chapter 23 and verse 25, it makes a very parallel statement concerning Josiah. So I'm not going to try to figure out, well, which was which, you know, among the great kings of Israel. But certainly the Spirit brings out these two men as two great kings of Israel. It says, none like them before or afterwards. Okay. And particularly with Hezekiah, it talks about his trust in God. Now, trust in God to him was real because he's living in a land that has no mechanism to defend itself. So, it was down here a few verses later, it says he breaks off from Assyria, verse 7. He rebelled against the king of Assyria. So is he inviting trouble, you see, by doing that? But he's trusting in God, you see. Trust was not easy, okay? You think of men like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their trust, you see, when they allowed themselves to be thrown in the fiery furnace because they wouldn't bow down, you see. To some of these men, trust was more than just something verbal. It was their life, you see. And so this statement, he trusted in God, none like him did that. And he held fast to the Lord and did not depart from following him, but kept the commandments of the law that the Lord commanded Moses in verse 6. It gives us some time frame, John, and what you were asking first, didn't know when was when. See, he is king during the time of Hoshea, the last king of Israel. It says here in verse 6, in the fourth year of Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea. Okay? And that's when the Assyrians surrounded the city. It was the fourth year of his reign, but it was the seventh year of Hoshea over Israel that they were surrounded in Israel. And then they were besieged for 3 years, so that becomes now the sixth year of Hezekiah and the ninth year of Hoshea, and that's when they fell. So Hezekiah was king during the fall, okay? Perhaps that's what he saw, in addition to what was happening on the Judah side. You see, except he was already king at this point, you see. He had already been through that first year when we get to right here. He had already done that. However, he would have known something of the plight of Israel. These particular events falling to Assyria would not have happened yet. In verse 13, though, it jumps to the 14th year. Okay, so it's quiet, you see, as far as the chronology is given to us from these events that we've seen in the first 2 months now to the 14th year. So there's a break. But evidently in this time, his faith was strong. And now we've got the detail of what happens here concerning the Assyrians coming to him. The Assyrians were attacking some other cities of Judah. And then Assyria comes against him, and they demand that he start paying them, talents of money, and he does that. But that doesn't appease Assyria. And, you know, his father done the same thing, and then they came against him. And in verse 17, the king of Assyria sent an envoy from Lachish to King Hezekiah. And when they called the king sent out some men, as listen verse 18, to go talk to him. And so now as we look beginning in verse 19, what these men from the Syrians say to the men of Judah. Now here's what I want you to think about, because we're not going to have time to go into these tonight. But here's what I want you to think about for the next class. I said in the paper, I asked you to list five arguments the Assyrian spokesman made to Hezekiah's representatives. Could be six. It depends how you count them. I count them sometimes as six or five, depending on how I want to break it up. But here's what I want you to think about with that. I want you to think about how Satan attacks us. Because what I want to suggest to you is that these five arguments that this envoy from Assyria uses against the people of Judah, the same arguments Satan uses against us. So think of those arguments not only in the light of the event that we're looking at, but think of those arguments in the light of how Satan uses them against us. Okay? And so strengthen our faith in what is it, the Second Corinthians letter Steve used in a sermon not too far back, the schemes of Satan, the wiles of the devil. And we'll see some of the ways that Satan works as we look at these things here in this letter. Thank you.